I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the 80s, Morisachi and Josephine Hart were one of London's most illustrious power couples. She was a beloved writer and poet, and he was a world-renowned advertising mogul instrumental in bringing his heroine, Margaret Thatcher, to power. For several decades, they enjoyed a blissful marriage until a routine GP appointment led to Josephine's cancer diagnosis. She died 14 months later. Since then, Morris has battled with grief, building a library of her favourite books, and for a time, eating a breakfast of grapefruit segments at her tomb every day. I spoke to Morris about his new book, well, it's his debut novel, actually, Do Not Resuscitate, The Life and Afterlife of Morris Saatchi, where we join Morris at the gates of heaven as his application for the afterlife is assessed by an eclectic jury composed of the likes of Marilyn Monroe, Pablo Picasso, and, of course, Margaret Thatcher. I started off by asking Morris about that ritual of eating grapefruit by his wife's tomb.
Yes, that went on for, believe it or not, 7 years.
And what would you do when you wandered out into the garden to Josephine's tomb and sat there with your grapefruit segments? Were you reminiscing, or were you actually in the moment talking about the things that were on your mind then that you would have liked to have shared with your wife had she been alive?
Well, I had to drive there because the tomb is about the end of the garden, so it's about a mile away. I had built the tomb, which is a temple, effectively, when Josephine was alive. And underneath the floor is a lead-lined room, which has in it at the moment one coffin and also the place for mine.
It's an extraordinary love story, yours and Josephine's, really profoundly moving in so many ways. When you try to describe it or articulate it, what do you think it was that created this incredible bond between the two of you?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is probably something that is well known to everyone, which is that true love, it's instant, isn't it, Mariana? Two eyes meet and then it's basically all over. And in our case, that's exactly what happened.
Were you a romantic before you met her? Because you say true love, it's two eyes meet and that's it. But lots of people don't actually get to experience that in their lives, or indeed might experience it briefly and then discover that their eyes had deceived them.
Well, that's true. And I don't know the answer to that. All relationships are complicated, aren't they, Mariana? I don't think it's easy to maintain a relationship, a true love relationship for a long time, not even for a few months or a few years. It's really very hard. Josephine herself described our relationship as better than I think anyone could possibly put it. Because in her book, Damage, she made the distinction between lust and erotic obsession. And she said lust is a desire for pleasure and erotic obsession is a desire for union. And I think that sums up my relationship with Josephine Hart perfectly.
Obviously defined by the latter rather than the former.
Yes.
You say people, you know, struggle to keep relationships alive and so on, but you've managed to keep your relationship alive even a decade or more after her death. And in many ways, this book that you've written, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's I don't know if it's a book or an artwork in a way. What prompted you to write it? Do Not Resuscitate, it's called. What prompted you to write it? It's unlike any kind of memoir or novel, and did you feel at all guilty about straying into Josephine's territory?
You mean the territory of a dead person?
No, I mean the territory of an author.
After my death, I arrived at the gates of heaven, and I found that they have an immigration problem. They have a million asylum seekers a week. It's worse than Heathrow. Queues, overcrowding, delays. And they tried everything to stem the flood. They did everything that you'd expect. ID scans, background checks, facial recognition, fingerprints, x-ray examinations, etc. But nothing worked, and the immigrants are still swarming in. There's no stopping them. A million a week. They wish for a better life, you understand. They decided they couldn't let everyone in, every Tom, Dick and Harry, any riffraff. After all, what's the point of heaven if everyone can get in? So the question that this book deals with, and I hope it provides an answer, I hope it reveals the biggest secret of all time, which is why some people go to heaven and others go to hell.
Morris, so, let's talk then, first of all, if we could, as you've just described, the Welcome to the Gates of Heaven has very clear parallels with current discussions about immigration and the migrant crisis. And some of the language you use there was very similar to our Home Secretary Suella Braverman in terms of, inflammatory, swarming in. You know, you can't let in every Tom, Dick and Harry and so on. Are you being ironic, and do you think that there is a kind of a dehumanizing impact? Because it certainly seems to be what you're highlighting at the beginning of the book.
I don't mind that. If you think there's an allegory there, that certainly wasn't my intention, but I don't mind at all. What this book reveals is who gets in and who doesn't. I think it will help people greatly to know what the answer to that question is. What I found very interesting in researching all this is that the Gospels are not clear. Sins. Well, what sins? Remorse. How? Faith. In what? So what they decided, the immigration authorities, is that they wanted full disclosure, full transparency, no cover-up. And their wish was that if people were provided with more information about what actually happens at the arrival gates, that could reduce the stream of hopeless applicants. That's what I explained.
Morris, you are way too clever and sophisticated to dodge your own allegory, which is very present in the book, I think, here in terms of all kinds of things, talking about cover-ups, talking about full disclosure, and I think very much presenting a picture very cleverly of what a person might face coming to a country like the UK, or indeed anywhere, to be honest, that people flee to. And you do seem to be displaying some sympathy for those who find themselves displaced, perhaps more sympathy than the Conservatives that you've supported all your life.
I don't mind that, Mariella. I'm not trying to duck that. I'm trying to hear say to people, if you want to enter and be admitted into heaven and not go to hell, this is what's required. What this is saying is that there should be, this is what they decided, the immigration authorities, people should know more. People should be given more information about what exactly makes the difference between somebody who goes to heaven and somebody who goes to hell.
Early on in the book, you do specify the people who are going to be in or out of heaven. Can you explain some of the characteristics required for innies?
Let me explain how I was able to know what the rules are. Because what I just said, which is that the source you'd normally go to, which would be the Gospels, following many conversations with serious people in the Church of England, the Gospels, they will agree that the Gospels are not clear, and that it would help people if they were more clear. They decided that they had to have a plan, they had to control the million asylum seekers a week, they couldn't let everyone in, and so there had to be a plan. And the plan that they arrived at is that they remembered that Jesus Christ himself achieved the greatest legacy in human history after a show trial, Pontius Pilate. So they decided to stage a show trial of their own, like no other. And all they needed was a defendant. And I was the chosen one.
You're quite harsh on yourself when you're on trial in the book. Do you believe any of the criticism you level against yourself? Obviously, a long life. You've done many things with it. What are the things that you sort of held up as evidence for the defence, as it were, if theirs was a prosecution?
Well, the prosecution, you're right, is extremely vicious and brutal and does demolish my life completely in all aspects. You've seen it. It's murderous.
Yeah, one of the key criticisms that the prosecutor holds against you is your involvement in the birth of negative campaigning. And funnily enough, I was just reading a quote this morning from Donald Trump talking about, you know, if Ron DeSantis runs, I will tell you things about him that won't be very flattering. Now, that certainly doesn't live up to your exacting standards in terms of a kind of catchy phrase. But it does indicate that the level to which negative campaigning has ascended, if you will. Do you see that as one of your greatest crimes against humanity?
No, I don't. I'll tell you exactly how I do defend myself. It is true that Professor David Butler, you remember him, the author of the Butler and Kavanaugh series on the British general elections, mm-hmm. he did say to me himself, flat out, to my face, you, Maurice Saatchi, are personally responsible for reducing all British general elections to negative campaigning. David Butler is quoted by the prosecution in order to demonize what I had done. But I can give you my answer, which is what I gave in court to the jury, which is that politics is an adversarial activity. You will either hit or be hit. And it is exactly the same as being in the ring, in a boxing ring, which is that somebody has punched you in the face and you're bleeding badly. And there's only one thing to do now, which is to land a blow on your opponent's chin, which knocks him out. That is how politics works. If one is not prepared for that, one will be too weak for this world. And there is a marvelous saying, when the camel kneels, the knives go in. So it's not possible to make any progress in politics unless you have that understanding.
Indeed, and I don't think anyone would argue with you about the fact that you have to be prepared for sort of adversarial combat, and that you need to be strong and able to withstand the knives as the camel kneels, as you put it. But what about the sort of soundbite nature of it? What about, you know, your brilliant slogan, Labour isn't working, and the way that was then employed later for things like Brexit? How did you feel about the evolution of reducing what should be, and I think you'd be the first person to say, you know, we need big discussions, big ideas, we need to pursue the impossible when it comes to politics. But if you can't put it into a three-word slogan nowadays, it's much, much harder to get any idea across. I mean, it was almost like you preempted the idea of social media, you know, where there's no room for too many words.
Well, I mean, that's exactly the accusation that the prosecution makes. I defended myself as sincerely as I possibly can, which is that I'm not comparing politics to poetry, but in the sense that the definition of poetry is the only possible words in the only possible order. That's the best definition I know of. So all of the great changes in the world, maybe that's an overstatement, but anyway, the most powerful rallying cries, let's put it that way, are simple and to the point. Here are some examples for you, Mariella. Your country needs you. No taxation without representation. One man, one vote. There wasn't anything complicated about liberté, égalité, fraternité. And nobody had to explain what it meant when they read on the Statue of Liberty the inscription, give me your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. And when they heard, go west, young man, they did. I don't think it's irrelevant that the average length of the Ten Commandments is seven words.
Do you think condensing something with that sort of brevity actually is an exercise in honing what your real message is? And if that's the case, to what extent do you think the Conservative Party at the moment needs a rebrand? Because I would struggle very, very hard to condense the messaging at the moment.
I'm going to answer your question directly, Mariana, mm-hmm. and I'm very happy to do it. The only thing I wanted to add in relation to this book is that there was a jury at my trial, and I'll tell you who they were. Your listeners may be interested.
It's made up of some very distinguished people, all deceased.
Yes, I mean, that's just a cross-section. I mean, that's how you choose a jury, isn't it? The cross-section of the immortal community. So in my case, the jury that they appointed was Marilyn Monroe, Stephen Hawking, Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Pablo Picasso, Albert Einstein, Alfred Hitchcock, Mao, Gandhi, John F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King.
Who did you feel was most sympathetic?
I mean, these people don't speak on the jury. You have no idea.
You can tell from the eyes.
From the eyes, yeah. I was given a task to perform, and I was asked to keep a record, a transcript of my trial. That's what they asked me to do, which is what I did. So you see, Mariella, I didn't write this book. It is attributed to me as the author, but I was just a journalist, a humble court reporter. Mariella, I was told to share the verdict with the world to reveal the greatest secret of all time, to help people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So going back to the Conservatives needing a slogan or not, you might disagree. You know, you wants to find the Conservatives as efficient but cruel, and Labour is caring but incompetent. But it seems that you could kind of mix those up for both parties at the moment. It would be very difficult to keep it to the two.
What I said about that was that you could understand all of British politics in two sentences. Conservatives are efficient but cruel. Labour is caring but incompetent. And if the position was to arise, which many people would argue it has, that the Conservative Party is not seen as efficient and isn't then seen as inefficient, well, that leaves the Conservative Party as inefficient and cruel. And if, let's talk about Labour, if Labour had the brains, which I'm not sure they do, but maybe they do, if they had the brains to make themselves, instead of caring and incompetent, to make themselves caring and competent, you would now have Conservatives are inefficient and cruel, Labour is caring and competent. If the Conservative Party may already have done itself damage in terms of efficiency, for sure. If Labour had the brains, which again, I say to you, Mariella, I don't know these people. I don't know if they have the brains to turn what is now their reputation for incompetence into a reputation for competence. If that could happen, if the Conservatives are inefficient and cruel and Labour is caring and competent, you would have the biggest landslide of a generation. And that's not impossible to imagine.
What if you lobbed the word caring into conservatism? Because that seems to me very much to have been part of the sort of underpinning of your conservative values over the years. You argued quite vehemently for poor people to be taken out of the tax system and so on. And those would seem to be values that, you know, still split the Conservative Party in half, or even smaller fractions. Do you think that it's a problem for the Conservatives to be seen as caring? Because right now, I think a lot of people feel like they need caring for.
I understand completely, and the reason that the Conservative Party would be regarded as cruel is because it would be regarded as being obsessed with money. And that would be the basis of people saying that the Conservative Party is cruel. And that's absolutely fundamental. The point you're making, Mariella, is terribly important. And this, I must stress for your listeners, that going back to what you were saying to me before about these very short,
pithy slogans
or sentences, all right, call them slogans. But those slogans, they don't come from nowhere. They don't come out of somebody dreaming up a slogan. They to be effective, they have to come from deep belief. They can't come out of thin air. They won't work coming out of thin air. One man, one vote did not come out of thin air. That came from an entire philosophy. And so far as the Conservative Party is concerned, it's let's just talk about that. If cruel means obsessed with money, which I'm suggesting that it does, then whereas the caring person has other values other than money. But one of the things which Mrs. Thatcher, who I obviously adored, not everyone did, but I certainly did, and she changed my life completely. So I owe her a tremendous amount. But she very much liked the story of the Good Samaritan, because it shows that first you need the money to do the good works. This is something which requires explanation. And obviously she was able to do that. What I suppose I'm putting to Mariella is that this is not the present situation of the Conservative Party is not a policy problem. It's an intellectual problem. Somebody has to work that out. And I think it's quite hard to do.
It's an intellectual problem in terms of the scope of the vision for what the Conservative Party represents, or am I oversimplifying it?
No, you're not, because you're exactly to the point. This is so crucial. This is the absolute central issue. If you want to regard the Conservative Party as cruel, you would regard them as being uncaring, let's say, about inequality. That there's rich people who are very rich, and there's staggering amounts of inequality, which is almost impossible to believe. The different levels of inequality, different levels of equality that exist now. The inequality that exists now is absolutely shocking and outrageous. Now, what is the Conservative Party supposed to do about that in order not to be regarded as only interested in money? I'll tell you about the most wonderful view of this that you could possibly get, which is from one of my jury members, Martin Luther King. He put it so starkly and so brilliantly. He said, "It is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps." In other words, the Conservative Party should be, and I believe is, that's why I have supported the Conservative Party for my entire life, ought to be the party that can address inequality about money. Money is supposed to be a conservative expertise about which one is not ashamed. But in order to explain that one's interest in money is not cruelty, the interest in money would have to be directed at reducing inequality. I think the Conservative Party is more likely to be able to do that than the Labour Party, but that's a lifelong held view.
And not at the moment, by the looks of things. I mean, there are those who would attribute the situation we find ourselves in now with these, you know, extremities of rich and poor, and indeed, you know, the sort of rampant free market to Margaret Thatcher's policies. I know that you were a big fan and friend of hers. Do you think that she envisaged the world we find ourselves in now, though, with these huge global corporations controlling sort of almost everything, and in many ways that freedom of the market that she envisaged, I would say, is slightly restricted by them, by their presence?
I totally agree. And she did not envisage what the current situation, which is that most industries are now giant cartels of giant global corporations. She did not envisage that. And neither did I. When Saatchi & Saatchi was, I hope, a significant proponent of globalization, when globalization was thought to be just a sort of Saatchi new business trick at the time. But I didn't see what's happened at all. And neither did she. She came to lunch after she left Downing Street, and I asked her if she knew the share of the top five banks in Britain in all financial transactions, loans, mortgages, credit cards, insurance, everything. She said she didn't know. I told her it was 80%. She said, with her eyes blazing as they could, "It's impossible." She didn't mean, Mariella, that wasn't true. She meant it was intolerable. So something, as you were just, I think, suggesting, something has gone wrong with Mrs. Thatcher's idea of the free market. It was meant to be a perpetual referendum. People cast their vote every day, and from the competition to win their votes, better products and services emerge. That's what the free market is. That's what it's meant to be. But unfortunately, it hasn't worked out like that, Mariella, which is what you were just hinting at. The free market has been taken over in ways that she did not envisage, and neither did I, by cartels of giant global corporations, so that there is now a huge imbalance of power between the individual customer and the global corporation. So much so, I'm agreeing with you so strongly that you could argue, and maybe I would, that big companies are now worse than big government, because at least with big government, you can change the boss every now and again. But with these companies, you wouldn't know where to begin. For example, have you ever tried calling BT?
Yes, I have.
Or Vodafone or UK Power Networks. Well, I have, Mariella, and I timed it. It takes longer to get through to BT than number 10. Vodafone takes longer than the White House. UK Power Networks takes longer than the UK Parliament. And here comes the best bit of all, Mariella, which is while you wait to speak to these companies, you pay. And the longer the delay with you on the phone, the bigger their profit.
I want to bring you back before I let you go, Morrison. I must let you go to your book. The novelist and writer, intellectual Julian Barnes, has also written very movingly about loss in the past, and he was very perturbed by this notion of moving on. And I think in many ways you sort of echo his sentiments on that, which is why do people say, you know, well, you must move on, and you have in fact steadfastly refused to in many ways move on from the loss of your wife Josephine Hart. She once wrote, "We learn from tragedy slowly." Is the book the sum of what you've learned, and do you think you've learned anything of value from her passing that in any way mitigates the loss?
Definitely, and that's what this book is about. And I owe that revelation, which I'm happy to call it a revelation, to the Dean of Westminster, Dr. John Hall. It's he who allowed Josephine Hart to have her memorial. It was going to be in Poets' Corner, but then it became very big and took over the nave of the Abbey. And afterwards, I asked him some schoolboy questions, of which the main one is, do you actually believe that all these dead people, do you really seriously yourself believe, putting aside all the sermons in Westminster Abbey, all your lectures, all your books, do you yourself actually believe that all these dead people are really there and that you will be reunited with your loved one? Do you actually believe that, that they're there? And his answer was, I'm certain of it. Now, Mariella, so am I.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.